You know that Greek guy, Archimedes. He said, give me a lever long enough and a fulcrum to place it on, and I will move the world. Just like I say, let me pick my own cohort and sample size, and I will statistically prove anything, boys and girls. Or let me write the reviews of my own product, and I promise you, I'll find that it's the best. Let me create a cadre of my own phony experts, and my underwriter will do the rest.
He completely identified with the story, and he has tremendous drive and energy, I have to say.
Hear ye, hear ye, all ye who hear this here podcast, know this. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Nothing discussed on this podcast should be considered investment advice. The hosts hold no licenses and are not financial advisors. Do your own research before making investment decisions, and we do hope you enjoy this podcast.
The Chartcast exists to highlight the important work of analysts, subject matter experts, journalists, and whistleblowers who have an important story to tell about corruption, fraud, and bad actors in the world of business and finance. If you find value in the show and would like to support it, go to thechartcast.com and look for the Support the Show button, or you can go directly to patreon.com/thechartcast. There you will find various support levels that are predefined, or you can do a custom amount. Thank you for your support and enjoy the show. All right, we are ready to go.
Gabriel Grego, welcome back to the Chartcast with TC and Georgia.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
We're very excited for this show. You're in the middle of a rolling breaking news event with Penumbra. Before we begin, a bit unusual for us, but I do want to disclose to the audience that I have a short position in Penumbra, a modest one for me, but I do have a short position, and I wanted to make sure that I disclose that. Nobody else on the show team does. Not that we have you on to talk my book. We're having you on because it's truly an amazing story, which we're going to dive into. Really interested in not just the particulars of the story, but sort of the background and the work process and sort of how we found ourselves here talking to you about it today. But before we begin, it is your second appearance on the show. You were a great guest on episode 30. For those in the audience that missed that episode, you can go back and hear Gabriel's deep bio, which is really quite fascinating. We're going to skip that for this show, but instead we'll start with maybe just give a reminder to the audience of who you are, what Quintessential Capital is, and what you do as a firm.
Well, I'm a hedge fund manager. I'm originally Italian, grew up mostly in Israel, so now I'm Italian-Israeli, I would say. I run this fund called Quintessential Capital Management that was opened back in 2013 at the beginning as a long-only fund. And then for a whole bunch of reasons, some of which we saw in our previous episode, I drifted more and more toward shareholder activism and especially short activism, which is now, I think, where I spend 80% of my time. It's a very rewarding activity. So what we do is essentially we go hunt companies which are misbehaving in the corporate world. And that misbehavior can be fraud, can be a deadly product, can be a failing business model, any kind of catastrophic but hidden corporate situation. We like to investigate it. And if we find a critical mass of damning information, we expose that situation to the public and let the market do its thing.
Gabriel, well, you are in the middle of a heated short battle, as TC alluded to, with Penumbra. And Penumbra, which trades under the ticker PEN, is a medical device company. They have about $500 million in sales. Why don't you tell us how Penumbra came on your radar and what you started finding and what the primary claims of your short activist report are?
I came across Penumbra when a friend of mine, who was also a former analyst of mine, I'm not sure whether I'm at the liberty of mentioning his name, so I will not in this venue. I might do so if he asked me to at some point. But he reached out, and he's aware of what Quintessential Strategy is. And very often he comes to me with some great ideas, which not always are actionable for us for a whole bunch of reasons. So this one time he said, listen, I have this idea. It doesn't look like it's an accounting fraud, which is our bread and butter, but I think it's an interesting one. It's about this company which essentially has a product out there which is causing deaths and injuries. The accounting is very aggressive. The management seems to behave in unethical ways, and the market is ignoring all of this. The stock is trading at all-time high at really aggressive multiples. Sell-side analysts are supporting it like there is no tomorrow. I think you should look into this. And I looked into this, and at the beginning, I wasn't sure exactly what I was looking for, but little by little, I started seeing that there was a lot that was wrong with this company, and at some point, I decided I would get involved. So for your listeners, just a summary of what, you know, what are the main issues with this company. Number one, we said it before, they have, or maybe the right word is to say they had, a defective product. It was maybe their flagship, their most important product, called the Jet7 Extra Flex, which is a catheter used to treat acute ischemic stroke. So when somebody has a stroke, typically this is caused by a blood clot. And what this company does, it builds catheters that are inserted into the femoral artery in the leg, and they go all the way up inside your brain, literally. They reach the blood clot, and they remove it through the application of suction. This is a relatively new and revolutionary technique, because before there were other ways to do it. There still are, by the way. Before you could dissolve the clot with a with drugs, basically, and or remove it with a stent retriever, which is basically a piece of metal that kind of scrapes it off. So they pioneered this technique. There were some people that questioned the research and the clinical trials that were made in order to put this product on the market, but one way or another, the product did arrive on the market. They had the market all for themselves for quite a while. And then at some point, one of its competitors in particular, so many competitors came with their own competitive products, but one of them in particular came with a product called the Sophia catheter, which was really a game changer. It could do exactly the same thing, but a lot more efficiently, faster. The catheter was a lot more flexible, was easier for doctors to use. And obviously, this product started getting quickly market share away from Penumbra. So what happened is Penumbra seems to have rushed the development of a new iteration of its product, whose performance was supposed to match the one of the Sophia competing catheter. And because you're a scientist, you will know that sometimes engineering accomplishments come with trade-offs. And in this case, the trade-off was flexibility at the expense of structural integrity. So my understanding of what happened is they made this catheter so thin and so flexible that they also made it prone to failure and malfunction. And in my opinion, it was not properly tested for a whole bunch of reasons that we can get into later if you want. The result is, as soon as this device was put in the market, it started malfunctioning in a certain percentage of cases, in a high percentage of cases, I would say, by, say, medical devices standards. And a good proportion of these malfunctions resulted almost immediately in patient injuries. And here we're talking about really bad injuries, right? People that that get brain damage, basically, and deaths. The deaths typically occurred upon the injection of conscious media into this catheter, which fails, expands like a balloon, and ruptures the artery, the brain artery, where that it's supposed to unclog, basically. Now, even giving the company benefit of the doubt as to why they did not detect this issue in the testing phase, which in my opinion they should have, and I have, you know, we can talk about that later if you're interested as to why they should, or they maybe even did detect it, but they decided to put it in the market right away. The moment that that started showing up, it should have been unbelievably clear for them what was the reason behind those deaths and injuries, and the reason was that there was an engineering slash manufacturing flaw. Instead, the company kept quiet, did not say anything. That's an injury started mounting up for almost a year. And at some point, their Japanese manufacturer, a third-party company, which is unrelated to Penumbra, probably they started getting scared about their own exposure to liability. They sent a letter to all the healthcare providers warning them, watch out, because this catheter seems to be malfunctioning under certain circumstances and should be used with care, as it has already used, caused 8 deaths in the United States and 3 deaths in Japan. They sent this notice to all the doctors in Japan, not in the United States, and immediately afterwards, the Japanese distributor took the product off the Japanese market, and it remains off the market to this day because it cannot get the permission from the Japanese equivalent of the FDA to be back on the market. The company ignored this for another 5 weeks, the company meaning Penumbra, and only 5 weeks later, when they probably couldn't keep this thing secret anymore, right after the person that was in charge of regulatory affairs at Penumbra resigned for reasons that to us don't make any sense, meaning he needed to be more with his family at the time of COVID at some point in April. But in any case, Penumbra sent a letter to healthcare providers, U.S. healthcare providers, basically telling them to be careful not to use the device under certain circumstances which were known to be causing problems. For example, do not inject conscious media inside it. But this letter was did not reach everybody and was not given the necessary emphasis. For example, it did not mention that any deaths or injuries had occurred. There was only mention of a theoretical risk. And doctors apparently get a lot of these letters every day, and most of them don't get the necessary attention. So most of them ignored it. And as a result, injuries and deaths continued to some extent. The other thing is the company has been deceptive and misleading in the way that it presented this information to the doctors. Essentially, it seemed to say between the lines that it was the doctor's fault if those injuries occurred because the doctors were using this device in the wrong way, and they claimed to have warned the doctors not to use conscious media to begin with. In reality, the company made it very hard to get our hands on an original instruction book which is attached to this device, and instead they changed the instructions both online and presumably in the product boxes, and they added a new warning not to do, for example, not to inject conscious media. Through the Wayback Machine, we arrived at the original version of the instructions, and we arrived asking a few doctors to the paper version of those instructions, and sure enough, there was no warning against injection of conscious media by hand. There was a very general warning of not to inject conscious media through an automated high-pressure injector, which is a very standard warning in this kind of procedures, and no doctors that knows the procedure would ever dream of using that in a stroke. But there was no specific warning for hand injection. The company pretended that this doesn't happen. Probably they were scared of legal liability. So the product was left on the market, and patients kept being injured. And at some point, Roddy Boyd, which is an exceptionally good investigative reporter, wrote a piece noticing that these deaths had occurred. And to my knowledge, until this time, the company had never revealed it publicly, not to the doctors, not to the investors. Nobody knew that this problem was resulting in deaths and injuries. And the first person who broke the news was Roddy Boyd. We read the whole thing and we thought there was still a lot to say. Number one, there was our intention to expose the company for having been misleading about the situation. And the situation was that the company was responsible for those deaths and injuries that already occurred, and that the company's response was insufficient to prevent further deaths and injuries, because we believe that the only way to prevent future casualties would have been to take in the product off the market, because it was a defective product. We were appalled by the fact that studying precedents, we saw that typically a product like this gets recalled immediately, even if there is a risk of death, or even if there are a few injuries showing up, and there are many precedents. Instead, Penumbra seemed perfectly happy leaving a product that was statistically expected to kill about a patient a month and to brain injure many more. So we started studying the situation, and the more we studied the company, the more we saw that the problems with the Jet 7 were only the tip of the iceberg. The real problem was a corporate culture and a modus operandi, which kind of, in our opinion, has resulted in the past and will result in the future in this kind of situations. And it's a toxic corporate culture, and we believe the leadership is rotten to the core.
Gabriel, this might be a good point at the outset of our conversation here to establish some of your methodology when it comes to evaluating some fraudulent activity or malfeasance in a field that is so complex. And this question actually comes from one of our funding secured patrons, and I think we'll spend the bulk of our time with you getting into the details of Penumbra and some of the mysteries surrounding the details there and the miscommunications and the way that management has handled it. But before we get into that, I think this question is important, and it is, how do you assess some of the technical issues and bring yourself up to a sufficient level of expertise to make the claims that you're making for companies that are in a space like medical devices, like healthcare, that also have international implications? You know, that what happened in Japan was a critical part of unwinding what is happening here with Penumbra, and you have, you know, time and language barriers, you have, expertise barriers, perhaps, you're not a medical doctor. Establish some of that for our listeners as to how you were able to really get a handle on what may or may not be going on here, such that you felt confident making the claims that you did.
It's an excellent question. And I think the answer is a mixture of my Israeliness in a way, and also leveraging on other people. When I say Israeliness, I mean that Israelis are very good improvisers. You can see that in a lot of fields in the way they conducted warfare in the past, and more recently in the way that Israeli startups work. Usually, we tend to seek shortcuts, and the idea here is usually in almost every field, and I'm studying a little bit of theoretical physics in the last 5 years, which is my big passion on the side. So maybe you couldn't do it in a field like that, okay? There's a lot of mathematics, etc. But in almost every other field, you can reach a decent level of working knowledge or proficiency just by learning the main concepts and the main drivers of any given phenomenon. So you don't need to be a doctor to understand the basic drivers of, what drives the solidity of a catheter, for example. In this case, I would say that my little bit of background in physics helped me a lot. For example, in understanding what could have been that caused the device to fail. And as soon as I started reading those accidents report and the fact that most people were killed because of the ballooning of the device, the ballooning makes you think right away of a problem with the tolerance to pressure. So what we did, for example, is I try to understand at what level, whether the device was tested for pressure. So, and second, what levels of pressures are typical for an injection of conscious media by hand. And I found a scientific paper that was basically divided into different syringes used and calculating a mean pressure and a pressure range for the different syringes. And then I just asked around to doctors what is the with what type of syringe do they normally use for a conscious injection. And you could see very well, for example, that the catheter was tested for up to 45 PSI, but the procedure is typically done with a 10 milliliters syringe, which on average can exert pressure of 55 PSI, and the range goes as high as 85. It can go even higher for vigorous pressure. So again, the idea is I read everything I can about it, and then at some point you will see that there are some parts you don't know. I try to understand what I don't know by other means, by studying the science behind it, for example. And again, I will not be an expert, but I will be proficient enough that I'll be able to A, identify a person who can answer the questions that I don't know, and B, I'll be able to ask the right questions. So what do? Is I go and seek out the experts, the best people I can find that are expert in any field or another. And I have a lot of conversations with multiple people with overlapping expertise. And at some point, you see that there is unanimity in certain critical areas. And when you do find it, that's very comforting. But I make it a point that I want to understand myself and agree myself with these conclusions of experts, not to just copy-paste their opinions, you see what I mean? So if their expertise agrees with my intuition and my limited understanding, then I think there is something there.
Yeah, it's a great process. Gabriel. And I think, you know, just again, for the benefit of the audience, you know, we've thrown around a few terms and maybe this would be a good opportunity to define them. You know, when you say inject contrast, this is routinely done by surgeons during, you know, what is a otherwise life-critical operation. You know, somebody's in a stroke and neuroscientists and doctors in the field like to say, you know, time is brain when they're operating on somebody going through a stroke, and the quicker that they can get things done, the better the outcomes for the patient. And it is a very common practice when you talk to doctors, at least reading your report and reading the great article by Roddy Boyd, which he published in mid-September, who he himself talked to a few doctors as well. It's very clear that for convenience and time and for patient efficacy, doctors routinely inject contrast agent through catheters. And it would seem almost foolish to use a catheter that you couldn't do this with, even if the fine print in the instructions said don't do it, if ever retroactively. So what a sort of ponderous claim on product use. And
but it didn't.
Yes.
I apologize if I interrupt you.
Yeah,
that's very important.
Yes.
That's a lie. And in that case, I think Roddy Boyd gave them too much the benefit of the doubt. He didn't go and verify this. The company said, oh, we said that in the instruction. No, you did not.
Mm-hmm.
There was no warning in the instruction.
Retroactively, yeah.
But there is something even worse. One thing is no warning. Maybe they didn't know. But Penumbra has a bunch of doctors on their payroll that get paid high consulting fees, essentially to evangelize their products the way that a tech guy would evangelize a startup, say. And at least one of these doctors, Mr. Alejandro Spiotta, and we mentioned this in our paper, as soon as 2 months before that notice to healthcare providers, was telling everybody in research papers, which we have published, was advertising the so-called ADAPT technique, which is the technique of using these devices without any aid, so directly sucking out the clot. And he said explicitly, at the end of the procedure, the doctor can inject contrast media directly into the aspiration catheter. So a Penumbra authorized doctor, a doctor very close to Penumbra that shows up in a lot of Penumbra's research, was telling everybody to use it that way. So you have to assume that Penumbra was aware and had nothing against this. So they're being deeply deceptive when they're claiming that they were telling doctors about it. Even if they, you know, if that was not true, it's right what Rory Boyd was saying, and many doctors were saying that the injection of contrast media is a completely normal thing to do with a catheter. Every doctor will tell you that. Even the very definition of a catheter is a tube for the passage of some kind of biological fluid. So it's completely normal. But even if that were not normal, Penumbra itself was evangelizing this technique while people were dying doing it.
So you're basically claiming, and the evidence that I've seen would support it, is that the degree of deception here goes well beyond silence. Silence would be bad enough, but in fact, people that were associated with the company and being compensated by the company were openly saying long after the deaths had started that this was a totally normal and perhaps even advantageous use of the product.
Yeah, I mean, that was the way. You see, this technique that I referred to before is called the ADAPT technique. I don't know what is the acronym stand for, but again, it's like maybe the ultimate way to use the catheter, because it's the fastest, for example. And you can do that when you manage to completely engulf the blood clot with the catheter. So you don't need any other tool. You can just suck it away. In some other circumstances, you need to suck it away and then still use a stent retriever, which is this metal piece to scrape whatever is left. Okay, so I don't know, and I want to hope that Dr. Spiotta were not aware that were mounting up while he was telling people to use the device that way. Hopefully not. So, but you know, I think it's something that should be well investigated, whether they were aware or not, and they still kept telling doctors to use it that way. It would be profoundly unethical to do that. And I cannot exclude it.
It sounds like Penumbra management was taking a look at the situation unfolding in front of them in 2018. They had been up to that point in the neuro segment, enjoying almost entirely the market share for catheters there. And then Microvention, I believe it is, that came on the market with a competing product called the Sophia. It introduced some features that were advantageous, more flexible, and so forth. And that product started to take market share. Penumbra management is put on notice that they need to do something and quick. Meanwhile, Penumbra has been spending far less than its peers on R&D. And so they issue the Jet 7 Extra Flex quite quickly into the marketplace to try and protect their market share against the Sophia and anything else that might be coming online. One of the things that I don't quite fully understand in this story is the role of the FDA here. How is it that the Jet 7 Extra Flex was permitted to be introduced to the marketplace when, as your report outlines, it was not tested under the same rigor that a standard or normal use would be for a catheter in those instances, and the same rigor that the Sophia was tested under? And that seems to be the heart of some of these technical problems with the device.
It's an excellent question. And, you know, I have to get a little bit technical to answer it. And even so, it will only be a partial answer. And again, only an investigation will fully respond. But this is my two cents. The FDA allows a so-called 510K fast track clearance process. This is not only for Penumbra's product, it's any medical device which already has a functioning product in the market, which was approved by way of clinical trials, which take a long time and are expensive. So this this company can apply for an upgrade of an existing product or a change of this existing product based on if this limitation, these changes are limited to things which are not expected to impact the safety profile of the device. And there is still a little bit of testing required, but this is only laboratory testing. For example, in the case of the catheter, the 510K would require passing, as we said before, a test that tests the device for pressure, shear stress, maybe stretching, and all other similar simulation of things that could go wrong with the device in a lab, but there is no need to do any clinical trials. Now, Penumbra tested its device. Again, we believe that there is a big engineering flaw in general, but let's be specific here. One of the big problems with this device was that it would fail when injected with catheter, so when a lot of pressure would show up. The test, apparently, that the FDA requires for pressure is only 45 PSI. So it's not that Penumbra decided, oh, okay, you know, I'm going to lower the testing standard. The testing standard is 45 PSI. As we saw before, injection of conscious media typically exert pressures much higher than 45 PSI. So competitors, responsible competitors, probably they exceeded the minimum testing requirements to be sure that they would put a good product on the market. And for example, Microvention with the Sophia tested it at 300 PSI, and this was supposed to be a burst test. In other words, the pressure was supposed to continue to increase until the device failed, and it did not fail until 300 PSI, which is a very high pressure gradient that you can only obtain with the machine, basically. Penumbra did not do the same. Now, theoretically, it would have been off the hook for not doing the same because the standard of 45 PSI is what the FDA requires, according to what I understand. In practice, a responsible company needs to understand that a device must be tested for real-world use, and Penumbra should have known that the doctors typically inject contrast media, and therefore they should have been more generous with coming up with the threshold for pressure. My own understanding, but this is based on the intuition and inductive thinking, basically, is that Penumbra knew full well that this catheter was probably too weak to be safe. And even if they didn't, and in my opinion, they did know, they would have understood very, very quickly, right after the first or second failure, that the device was unsafe. Let me tell you why. I reached out to a doctor who has helped me out very much into this investigation, and he gave me a functioning copy, a functioning product of the Jet 7. And together, we basically tested this product. Very simply, we occluded one of the tips, and we injected saline solution inside. I actually put a video of this test live in my Twitter feed 1 month ago. And immediately the device failed without exerting any specific pressure. And this shows you that it's not a matter of a few defective devices out there or a bad batch or something like that. It is a design flaw. So understandably, the moment that anybody at Penumbras reads those FDA reports saying that the device failed by ballooning, the first thing that I would have done, and then any responsible company would have done, is to perform again a pressure test. And they would have noticed that, hey guys, I mean, if you just inject a little bit of conscious media with a little bit of pressure, the thing fails and fails in a way that is likely to kill the patient. So any responsible company would have taken it immediately off the market and corrected it. That did not happen, and did not happen for 1 year. That's an awful long time, and people should have known or must have known that in this year, people were statistically expected to die at a pace of at least one per month and being injured at a pace of about four per month. And this is only the ones that get reported, and we know that there is typically a lot of underreporting. So it's a profoundly unethical behavior, and it's very sad because those people really died unnecessarily. They could be now with their loved ones, and they're not.
So, Gabriel, you complete your research. You know you're ready. You have a strong track record of only undertaking, you know, short activism campaigns when you know you have the goods. You publish your first report, which is focused on really the product quality issues, the deaths, the inadequate response of management, pulling of the product from Japan, retroactively changing the instructions, which is sort of a screaming red flag of knowing guilt. And then also, you know, the company raising money in the end of June to put some cash in the bank, knowing what was going on, but probably not disclosing it. There's been another report since, which we'll get into later. But after you announced the report, you know, you broke the news on Muddy Waters, Zero's television, Carson Block's new online show. How has your life changed? We can hear with the incoming stream of messages that life has been very busy for you since you published it. You know, the old saying is it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. The company seems to have initially denied forcefully the accusations. Walk us through the response to the first report, which we read and sort of led me to take my initial short position maybe a week after you published it. It's a very damning report. It's very compelling. Talk to us about the publication of it and the response to it.
Well, the publication, as you correctly said, was through Carson Block's Muddy Waters Zero TVs, which I think is a great initiative to give a platform for activist short seller to come up with their ideas. And we're always short of a good platform, by the way. We need to, you know, sometimes the media is very generous with their time, sometimes not, depending on the story. And I think everybody will agree at this point that, you know, skeptics should be given a platform because very often they managed to say something important. So we came out with this platform simultaneously. I also released on my website and on an emailing list a lot of a report, a presentation, a third-party assessment by an FDA expert called Stephen Brooks, great guy, by the way. And we also did a professional video, which you can find on YouTube, which is maybe a little bit long. It's 50 minutes long, but which kind of covers the whole presentation slide by slide. Unfortunately, the response there was no response. The company did not address any of our allegations publicly. They didn't make a statement. They didn't make a press release. What they did do, in some way, we're not going to get into how or why, but it seems as though the CEO was tipped off that a report may have been forthcoming. So he, at the last minute, he called sell-side analysts and some of the large investors and essentially called them, and they had a lunch, I was told, at JP Morgan. And then, you know, in this platform, one by one, the investors were told that everything in the report was BS and shouldn't be relied upon, and it's old news, and everything was good with the Jet 7 and then great with the company. And I'm sorry to say, the sell-side analysts that are covering the stock, I would say all of them, or almost all of them, and are accomplices into supporting this company, and definitely into losing people's money, because I think the stock was trading at levels that didn't make any sense, even for a company that doesn't have the kind of serious problems that we highlighted. And so that made the our intervention at the beginning, from a price perspective, ineffective, because the price ended up going up 8%. And, you know, it would be interesting to find out if there would be an investigation and if there was anything improper in that engineered short squeeze that happened. So yeah, there was no company response except for this of this meeting in closed doors. And obviously, we're not the type of person that lets go. And then after this, also Mark Cohodes kind of jumped into the field to give us a hand. And we kept digging and digging. And as we were digging, we found out more information that we thought was damning and worrying and that needed to be told as well. And we released another report a few weeks later.
You know, speaking of sell-side analysts and the role that they've played here, maybe we can skip ahead a little bit and then circle back. But I want to talk about the call that was held last night by Penumbra Management, because analysts obviously were on that call and had an opportunity to ask questions. And I didn't hear the call live, but I read the transcript subsequent and was absolutely stunned to read that there was really, you know, the analysts were giving softball questions primarily to management. This is on the heels of an announcement that the company was going to recall the product. So that is a significant announcement coming from the company, and that the call was scheduled in response to that press release. And after CEO Adam Elsesser, if I've pronounced his name correctly, gives his prepared remarks on the recall, the first question from the analyst is about their future product pipeline. And there is not an acknowledgement that your short activist report exists. There aren't discussions about really any detail about the claims there. What do you make of the call last night?
In a nutshell, it was a joke. It was an example of corporate malfeasance, also not only in the company that we targeted in the report, but in a lot of the investment banks, which in a way are accomplices to what's going on. In a way, they're accomplices also for what happened to the patients, because at the end of the day, for better or for worse, a lot of people, the regulators, they take the price of a stock as an indicator of whether there is a problem that should be looked into or not. And by artificially keeping the price inflated, I think a lot of the sell side analysts are accomplices in delaying what, in our opinion, should have been a just intervention to, you know, to take that catheter off, for example. But let me tell you what's happening here. And I think people should be named. I think a lot of the people which are covering the stock are also profoundly unethical. To give you one example, I'm going to have to mention here explicitly Bob Hopkins from Bank of America. And so this person, you know, when we send out our reports, those that you read also, we usually copy in analysts which are covering the stock, because it's their job to be informed and they should know the situation in, you know, and they should know bad news as well as good news. And they should look at a problem from all points of view, theoretically, in a very unbiased way. So this Bob Hopkins, after I sent him the first report, he replied me an email asking me in a rather impolite way to remove him from the mailing list of Penumbra, which is pretty interesting, right? Because he's responsible for covering the stock and disseminating information. So you'd think he'd be grateful that I put him in that mailing list, right? You would understand that you probably would want to be there. He asked me to be removed. Okay, fine. In the next report, the one about Antique Bose, which is this fake character which shows up as the author of a lot of Penumbra's research, I removed him from the mailing list, but I sent him an individual email saying, hey, listen, this, I removed it from the list, but I think you should see this anyway. So I copied in the report. This happened at 7:30 on the very same day that this gentleman was supposed to have a one-hour webcast with the Penumbra CEO, Adam Elsesser, and which obviously Penumbra would have loved to use in order to, you know, to boast the bright future of its company and the fact that the Jet 7 is really safe. So 1 hour before, he had a long time to read the report. Presumably, Adam Elsesser must have read the report in advance. He had an hour before the interview. But guess what? Not one question was asked during the webcast by Bob Hopkins to Adam Elsesser about what was arguably a, you know, very, very disturbing reality, the fact that a lot of research appeared to be authored by a person who was invented. Now, as if this was not enough, this person, on the very same day, sent out an email to presumably all of his mailing lists. So again, I'm talking about Bob Hopkins from Bank of America, essentially saying that a lot of people have been reaching out to him and asked him how come he didn't ask any questions about the fake persona authoring Penumbra's research. And the answer was, well, you know, this report was arrived at 8:15 a.m., only 15 minutes before the meeting, and obviously Adam Elsesser didn't have time to read it. That's why he couldn't ask any questions. This is a lie, and I tweeted a screenshot of the timestamp in the email that appeared when I sent him the report, which was at 7:30, an hour before, not 15 minutes before. So this person had so little ethics and so little intellectual honesty that he felt comfortable sending a mass email containing a gross lie about what we did. So if this doesn't tell you enough about the ethics, I think it explains a lot. If anybody is still undecided and gives the analysts a benefit of the doubt about their objectivity, they should know that Penumbra is a very profitable company for investment banks because it keeps having to issue shares since it doesn't usually generate any cash. So it does these share issues, which are underwritten by the very same banks in most cases that cover the sell side research of Penumbra. And obviously these guys, their institution are making millions because of Penumbra's activity in on the investment banking side. So it's an old problem, the conflict of interest that arises in analysts because those same institutions are on the one hand providing so-called unbiased research and on the other hand, they are in bed with the companies, with the very same companies they cover because of investment banking fees. My only surprise, it's not so much that this is happening, is that people still give a shred of credibility to whatever these clowns keep saying about this company or of other companies. Another institution that must be called out is Canaccord-Genuity. Canaccord-Genuity also has been very aggressive into giving price targets for Penumbra. And I have to say that if you go look at my track record, not a few of the complete fraud that we exposed to the public and that ended up sometime with criminal proceedings, a lot of these were actually underwritten by Canaccord-Genuity, and Canaccord-Genuity was also an analyst covering them. To give you one example, it's Global PLC. So I would tell your listeners to completely ignore sell-side research in general and definitely ignore it when there is a negative situation going on, or at the very least to check if they have conflict of interest. Go check whether the same analyst which is giving you aggressive price targets may not also be part of a bank which is making large amounts of money of funds from underwriting or any investment banking relationships.
And to think, Gabriel, you're the one being called sleazy.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, before we dive into the second report, which I think is very fascinating, if perhaps maybe a bit of a sideshow, that we should state for the audience what has transpired here. A week ago, in response to the second report, which we'll talk about next, but really addressing the first report, they referred to you as a, quote, sleazy short seller trying to get, you know, life-saving medical devices off the market. And then not a week later, yesterday, they claim they, quote, voluntarily recalled the device in question. And you sort of have to read the fine print to find out that the FDA requested them to, quote, voluntarily recall this product after basically sitting on the information that you brought to the market's attention for over a year. So it's really amazing if you go to the Penumbra website, the last two press releases are, one, them calling you a sleazy short seller, and then, two, they're actually validating everything in your first report. And the reason why they had to call last night was because they were forced to recall and they had to address investors. And then the analyst that you're talking about from Bank of America is the very same analyst who asked the first softball question. No surprise that the CEO of Penumbra picked him off the board for questions. I'm sure if Mark Cohodes had submitted a question, he wouldn't have been selected for the call.
Yeah, of course. We, not yesterday, because obviously, or obviously, honestly, right after the catheter was recalled, I went to the gym in a kind of celebration because I'm a very sporty person, and in this last couple of weeks I was so busy reading and producing research about this company that I haven't trained for 2 weeks. So I said, okay, now it's, you know, mission accomplished. It was the beginning of the mission accomplished at least. So I went for a workout and I did not log into the call. But the call that I was referring to before, The one that happened also, I think, at Bank of America a few weeks ago. That call, I tried to get in, and you know, I knew that I would probably not be let to participate in the call. So I had my wife calling on my behalf, and the kind of questions that they started asking about who exactly was calling reminded me of an interrogation. So you could tell that the company did not want any uncomfortable skeptics on the call. Obviously, it's futile.
So the story really blew up and got a ton of media attention on your second report, which I think, you know, it's a fascinating report and it's very titillating to read. But in reality, I think you've already won on the core issue, which is this product is dangerous and needs to be recalled. And it has been recalled. And the stock price has re-rated accordingly, at least partially. The second report is a fascinating one, and it's a sort of tale of intrigue and fake personalities and internet personalities, impersonation. It's a really bizarre story. I'd like to sort of close the podcast with a sort of a deep dive on it to the extent that we can without getting too lost into the weeds. Talk to us about the famous Antique Bose, how you discovered this character, and how it relates to the story, if at all.
Well, Antique Bose, credit must be given. It was not discovered by me at the beginning. It was spotted by my very talented analyst. His name is Sean. We never give the last name for security reasons. But basically, I asked him to please go and look for instances of nepotism. So Penumbra is the most nepotistic company I've ever seen. It seems to be a generalized problem that everybody hires their children into the company, regardless of relevant experience. Just out of, you know, I'm not exactly sure why I do that, but I don't want to name anybody now because I don't think that the children of the executives are necessarily accomplices in all this. I'm not going to single them out. But I can tell you that there are a lot of these episodes. And by the way, not only among the executives, all you need to do is open Glassdoor and you'll see that almost every former employee or current employee is singling out nepotism as a huge problem at Penumbra. Anyway, I was gathering information about this, and I asked my analyst to please come up with, you know, to check if any relatives of Arani Bose, which is one of the co-founders of the company, would show up working for Penumbra. And we found a former employee named Antique Bose on LinkedIn, which I thought was very interesting. I said, okay, that's funny. Why? And I figured, okay, this was probably a cousin or a son or an uncle of Arani Bose who got a cushy job at some point at Penumbra in 2011. And I thought it's worth to inquire more about this person. And sure enough, if you just run a Google search of this guy, before they deleted all the content, obviously, after my report, you will see that most of the content that comes out right away has to do with academic research. And you'll see that the person, even on his LinkedIn profile and in other academic profiles like ResearchGate, for example, he lists all of his research papers. And you will see that a very large proportion of these research papers, like more than 50%, had to do with Penumbra or Penumbra-related clinical areas, which I thought was very interesting. And so I said, let's learn more about this guy. And, you know, we ran what I called a OSINT operation, open source intelligence. We tried to understand as much as we could by open source. And very quickly, in a way that I would probably ask your listeners to check out if they're interested, because I think it's been very well described in that report, you will see that a huge amount of evidence would show that this Antique Bose is a fabricated person. We checked the places where he claims to work or study or having studied or teaching, and all of this suggests that it's bogus. And it would seem as though this Antique Bose was put together by a sophisticated multi-year exercise of deception. This is not just the result of just some prankster or PhD student that just wanted to make a laugh. It's been something that's been going on for 10 years, and in the United States for at least 5 years. And it involves keeping opening multiple fake websites and upgrading them and updating them on a regular basis with fake friends. And so this is somebody invested a lot of money in the creation of Antique Bose. And obviously, what made me very curious is why would this deal be happening? And we have our theories. What definitely shows up is that Arani Bose has a proven record, proven history of writing research papers which are supporting of Penumbra and its products without disclosing that he has a conflict of interest. So, for example, without disclosing that he's the co-founder and one of the largest shareholders of the company, he was caught by one of the journals where he submitted one of his papers, and you know, and the editor basically told him, "Hey, listen, you lied, and you were supposed to declare your conflict of interest, and you said you had no conflict of interest in writing this," which, you know, you guys are scientists, so you know that in academia that's a very serious faux pas, or it's a very serious thing, you know, transgression to do. Also, the other things that made us very curious is the timing. So although Antik Bose, the first time that shows up on the internet is in 2010, but it shows up sporadically and mostly in India, all of a sudden it shows up in the States prominently, and it shows up in August 2015 for a start. And most of the activity focuses in the period between 2015, August, and you know, September and October, which, guess what, is the period almost exactly coinciding with the company's IPO. So what we thought about is, okay, any academic, especially doctors, would probably not be fooled by this Antik Bose exercise for a whole bunch of reasons, namely that ResearchGate is not thought to be a very popular website for actual scientists and definitely for actual doctors. But on the other hand, my theory was that an investment banking analyst, for example, that's in charge of doing due diligence on Penumbra before of underwriting, might not be as familiar as academic sites, and might take whatever they find on ResearchGate or other website used by Antik Bose as legitimate. And therefore, the idea there would have been to give some kind of a legitimacy to the vast amount of research that existed on Penumbra's product, which in our view was incredibly conflicted, because pretty much every doctor, or almost every doctor engaged in that research, seems to have been receiving consulting payments from Penumbra, you know, which have been disclosed, by the way, but they received them. And I think any rational person, even a potential investor that's looking at this research, if he sees that almost all of it was produced by people which have been paid by Penumbra, and the leading person behind a clinical trial or a paper is the co-founder of the company, a larger shareholder, well, that gives you an impression that there is not enough independent research corroborating this clinical trials or these products, and therefore might have had a problematic impact on the IPO. This is conjecture. This is our idea. But, you know, if it were me doing a little bit of due diligence before buying a stock in an IPO, I would have probably been fooled, because the S-1, which is the document, the IPO prospectus, mentions certain clinical trials. These clinical trials are described in research papers which seem to be authored by Antik Bose. And if I Google the name of the paper, I end up on Antik Bose's website, not on Arani Bose's website. So many investors could have been fooled by this. And our lawyers told us that if true and confirmed, this can be a very, very serious type of behavior, which might even have criminal consequences under some circumstances.
Well, it is absolutely bizarre. I would suggest that our listeners, if they're interested to learn more about all of this, that they go to your website, which is qcmfunds.com, and up in the upper right area, there's a link for Penumbra, and there you'll have all of Gabriel's reports. You know, we say on the show, I feel like so many times, that the truth is often stranger than fiction. And I suppose in retirement, we could write a great white-collar crime thriller, and we wouldn't even have to really come up with anything new. We could just simply scour these interviews that we have with folks like yourself and others, because it is really amazing the lengths that people will go to try and prop up things that aren't exactly deserving, to say the least. Let's maybe just head into the conclusion of our discussion today with talking about what's next. So Penumbra has issued a recall on the Jet 7 Extra Flex. How material is this to the business, and how reflective do you think this recall is of what actually needs to occur? I know that after our interview today, we're recording on Wednesday, the 15th of December. You're headed to join Mark Cahotas for another Periscope. So I presume this is not the end of the line for you and for what you are going to be working on with Penumbra to try and get some resolution. What is next?
Well, let me give you some new information here. First of all, we're not done. I don't think that this is an isolated occurrence. I don't think this is a freak accident. I think that what happened with the Jet 7 is the result of a deeply flawed modus operandi of this company and of some deeply flawed leadership. And let me say it again, deeply flawed and unethical leadership. Now, this problem has happened before at the company. The company had a product called Coil 400 for the treatment of aneurysm. And we will be disclosing information, including, for example, transcripts from legal proceedings that show that the situation with the Coil 400 was almost carbon copy of what's happening now with the Jet 7. The Coil 400 was proven to be defective. The company found out about it almost right away. They failed to warn doctors or to warn them adequately and in time. They ignored a scathing letter that the FDA sent them highlighting all of these issues. And this ended up hurting and injuring a lot of people. And there was litigation of one person who ended up being severely brain damaged because of this product. And the company lost and were forced to settle. Also, there have been other instances in the past, not at Penumbra, but where some doctors which have been involved in Penumbra research were involved in both of the circumstances, again, with another company that used to be called EV3. And in this company, very similar things happened. Defective product, injuries, silence by the company, eventually litigation. And it turned out that a lot of the research that was used to approve this product was actually the result of corrupted doctors, a doctor that received payments and sometimes irregular payments. And we don't want to steal the thunder, but we're researching, and it seems as though some of these doctors may have had something to do with Penumbra and Penumbra research as well. So the big picture that we see is that, again, it's a modus operandi of getting devices approved by way of insufficient testing, marketing devices based on research that has been put into question by many doctors. For example, there is a meta-analysis, which is essentially a research paper on a research paper, which puts into question all of the research which the medical community has used, and Penumbra in particular, to legitimize aspiration thrombectomy as a treatment for stroke. You're a scientist, or you're familiar with this kind of thinking. The sample size was criticized for being too small. The definition of success and failure were arbitrary and probably incorrect. And in some cases, the therapy trial, for example, a lot of the research papers describing the therapy trial, by the way, appear as authored by Antik Bose on ResearchGate, was this trial had to be interrupted for ethical reasons, because the therapy seems to be so ineffective that it was unethical to keep treating basically the aspiration group through aspiration, because the control group was doing so much better. And then, in reasons that we'll see, the aspiration ended up becoming mainstream anyway. So, yes, approving procedures and product based on, in our opinion, insufficient clinical trials or biased clinical trials. And then when problems inevitably show up, ignoring them, not warning doctors, and trying to get away with it. In this case, I want to think that our intervention caused the FDA, or at least like increased the incentive that the FDA had to finally intervene, and we commend them for having moved the way they did and so quickly after our report. But, this thing could have had a bad ending. If the FDA hadn't moved, the product would still be on the market. It would statistically kill as much as one patient per month. It would injure many others. And at some point, the company would have come up with a substitute product, which may or may not have solved the issue of the Jet 7 and continue business as usual until the next death shows up. So we believe that the whole corporate culture is problematic at Penumbra, and we don't intend to stop our activity of bringing transparency and accountability until we get some resignations and some acknowledgement and some accountability for what happened.
Well, Gabriel, you know, you do great work. You're a wonderful guest. We certainly appreciate you coming back to give a little bit of a deeper dive on some of the goings-on with Penumbra, you know, beyond just the reports. And probably a good time to remind the audience that nothing on this show is investment advice. I can tell you from deep personal experience that shorting potential frauds and catastrophic corporate situations is very difficult and not for the faint of heart. I do believe in the quality of your work and in the quality of your character. I'm very much a fan of what you and Mark are trying to do here with Penumbra, given the sort of science background that I have and I observe what's going on here. I wish you and Mark and, you know, the rest of the people that are sort of leading the charge on this front all the best of luck. And we certainly appreciate the time that you've spent with us here today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure being here. And please continue on your own activity, which again gives platform to people like me to speak out and informs the public in a way that I like very much without, you know, without screaming, without big words, but, you know, but just using the power of reason and evidence-based thinking, which I think is, you know, is the most important thing to do.
Scalpel.
Scalpel.
All right, here we go. Here's the incision. Give me some contrast.
Contrast.
Now give me a fluoro shot.
Fluoro shot.
Yes, yes, this was the right decision. Okay. I think we've got it. Withdrawing now. Suture.
Suture.
There. All sewn up. We're done. So easy, it was almost fun. Nurse, now can you go get me a Jet 7?
A Jet 7, but the procedure was a success. The patient survived. He didn't expire.
Oh, I don't use those things for patients anymore. It was so nice today, I rode my bike, and I've adapted those so I can pump up my tire.